Artist Irene Taranas and her sister Phyllis grew up in the Quad Cities, experiencing life in a barrio and engaging in high-profile local protests. They agreed to sit down with us to discuss those days, how they influenced Irene's art, what Irene's current projects are, and how the old issues are still reflected today.
Phyllis and I are part of six children, my mom and dad. My mother was Maria Terrones. My dad was Felipe Terrones. And when we grew up in Cook's Point, which no longer exists. It was almost right across from Credit Island.
Right. It was a barrio of people that were recruited by the various railroad companies to work the railroads. And many times in grade school, the other classmates would taunt us Mexican children, and they would say, "Go back where you came from." Well, we didn't come here. Our grandparents were recruited to work on the railroad, and they helped with the necessary building of the economy here in the Quad Cities.
I believe that in the barrio that Mexicans came in about the 30s, and my mom and dad were active in leading the community. There were a few black people that lived there. I believe a few white people, but most of us were Mexicans. And some of us lived right across from the dump. We did not have running water. We did not have electricity. So as an artist, when I was growing up, I do remember the barrio and Cook's Point. And I remember running from our house, which was probably about five blocks from where my grandmother lived. And my grandmother's house was like the hub of the mortuary. When people died, they would have the funerals there. And my grandmother was a very gregarious person. And so I really used to love to go over there. So I would be constantly running back and forth. And so all of these images I remember as I was growing up and being along the river always fascinated me. And I remember even being on a raft in a pond, trying to navigate that before the whole neighborhood got really excited that I was out there by myself. I believe it was in the early 1950s, possibly the late 40s, 1949, where they decided to build a highway going through that area, and we were all forced to relocate. But the biggest problem was that many neighborhoods in Davenport, Iowa, would not accept Mexican-Americans, even if we had the money to buy the homes. Now, consequently, my mother and my grandfather decided to buy a tract of land, 10 acres, and resettle there. So my grandfather, with the help of his sons and I believe it was the Catholic Diocese of Davenport, helped build the houses out where Phyllis now lives. And maybe you can tell them where you live.
Okay. I live on what they call River Drive, but initially the houses were moved there because when my parents tried and grandparents, uncles and aunts tried to rent or purchase a down payment on a house, they would say, "No, we don't rent or sell to Mexicans." So as Irene, my sister, mentioned, they had purchased a tract of land out on River Drive, and to this date, it's still at the courthouse. It's still titled Ramirez Subdivision. That was my mother's maiden name, Ramirez. And part of the story of relocation to River Drive from Cook's Point, there was three houses that went on rollers to River Drive, and St. Ambrose and the Catholic Justice Group helped to relocate us and even dig out basements. And the Catholic newspaper, the Catholic Messenger here for the Diocese of Davenport on the Iowa side, did a story about how this group called Interfaith Justice Group, which included many facets, the Jewish community, the seminarians such as Father Marvin Moddet, which is an icon here in the Quad Cities, and for justice and discrimination. They physically dug out the basements for the three houses that came on rollers from Cook's Point, which is near Credit Island, over to, where we live. And it doesn't seem like now that the River Drive is an open space. You know, sometimes they drive 80 miles an hour instead of 45. But to see the houses go on rollers and then go down there. But then, too, some of the people that were in construction, such as the Edsel family and some of the other construction people, they came in and donated their time and their talent and their some of their resources. But more than ever, the way that some of the people opened up their minds and their hearts, where some doors were closed, they opened their hearts and their minds to allow people to make their way in the community. And Irene is one of the examples of it, that you can, as the saying says, Cesar Chavez says, si se puede, yes, you can do it. And many other cultures have that too. But want to thank all the people that helped us at that time. That was part of what the Quad Cities meant. And then to this day, we have the Interfaith Group, which he started too, Father Marvin Moddet. But we also want to give thanks, people from Cook's Point want to give thanks to all the people, all the different groups of here in the Quad Cities, including the Jewish Federation.
What I did do, I grew up, I went to West High School, and then I went to a couple of years of college here in Davenport. Then I went to Mexico City and went to school for 1 year. And that's where I saw the great murals and great Mexican paintings there. And I was really, really influenced by all of that. At one time, I had wanted to become a muralist, but I really got into painting. But after Mexico City, I came back and I worked a couple of years at the Arsenal. Then I looked for a school, found Cal State Long Beach that had an incredible, and they still do, art department. And I was lucky enough to do classes like figure drawing. And consequently, when I did do my master's, my project was on called Reflections of a Mexican Heritage. And, of course, the figure, which I really loved drawing, I decided to incorporate my past, and not just my past, but what trying to pick symbols that merge the indigenous part of my heritage and the Spanish side. Now, I particularly identified more with my indigenous past because after seeing the great murals by Orozco and, and the small paintings of Frida Kahlo, I decided that I would use some of those things in my own work. And so when I was at Cal State Long Beach, where I got my master's, I took old photographs from our family taken when we were in Mexico. Now, some of those photographs were by a professional photographer, and they are outstanding images in themselves. So what I did is In some paintings, there are approximately, some of them are 3 feet by 5 feet. Some of them are smaller. But there is this interaction of time and space where the photograph is painted, this and the figures in it are painted the same size as myself. I use myself as the contemporary person. And so that and the one that I'm thinking of especially is the one where I decided to use the ocean and place that barcle or that flotilla on there and with my mom's cousin and her standing. And then it's placed on the beach with the waves coming in, and I am sort of lunging towards it. And you can only see my back, and you can see their front. So it's almost as if here are some immigrant people, or any immigrant people, coming in on a boat, and here I am, kind of watching them in the sense of a Rembrandt painting, only in this, not that it's, you know, anywhere close to that in terms of technique, but in terms of the interaction when Rembrandt has his figures interacting with each other. So I did him in oil. I did drawings first for it, and I ended up doing a series, I think, of 10 paintings. And one of them is here, Augustana, which has the my grandmother and grandfather, and they're laughing. And I am, because it just struck me that she was so gregarious that I wanted that kind of feeling. Plus, I wanted to inject visually the time period, which would have been the Cesar Chavez movement and the Great Boycott. So I included myself sitting on this crate that has the labor union insignia on it, the eagle. My mom and my brother, John Taramas, they were pretty active. When that Great Boycott was happening here in Davenport, I have been traveling in and out so many times. I think I was here, but I'm not sure. My mom actually, when Chavez came and Dolores Huerta came here, actually housed them, providing a place for them to stay. When I was at Long Beach, I met Cesar Chavez, and I was so impressed by this small man, physically a small man, but just an incredible determination to do what he did. And then, of course, I've met Dolores Huerta, and she's from New Mexico. So the Great Boycott was probably over when I did this painting, but it was still an important thing. It was still pretty fresh because I got that crate. And I remember that when they settled, that crate hadn't been out there that long. So when I was going to school out there, the Chicano movement was very strong. When I lived here in Iowa, I wasn't involved that much because I believe I was, I can't remember what I was doing, working or something, I can't remember. But I have, my mom and my brother and Phyllis have been the real activists. I've done it a different way, perhaps, but I probably reflected more on it rather than being a direct participant. I remember being influenced by that movement. Now, to inject some humor into it, because my grandmother was always joking around, I placed myself on that crate in the nude, okay? So you could just see my nalgas, and my grandma and my grandpa are laughing as they're looking out. I decided to do it in the snow because, you know, how many times do you see a nude person sitting on a crate in the snow? I have to keep saying, though, as I'm talking about it and kind of looking at this copy, that I really, when I was in school studying painting and doing the painting, I was really influenced a lot by Rembrandt. I think what he did reflecting his culture, the Dutch people, I just think that's really admirable. There's something about touching your roots and really engaging with it in a way that you might not if you were part of the community. And sometimes, because I did move away, I like my own personal space. I have these engagements that where I do participate in New Mexico with the community, but not too often. I'm always the kind of figure that kind of stands back, and I just love observing people and the interaction. And I think that's the kind of painting I've always done. And what I do now with the land, because I am really attached to the land, I just love the whole idea that I grew up by a river and I was born in Iowa and I traveled to Mexico and lived there. But I do have a strong connection to the land where I live now and the mountains. There's no doubt about it. The whole idea of just being able to move from one space to another has always engaged me. From there, on my second master's, I did a project called Ephemeral Reflections. And those were drawings. They were like about 4 feet high by 8 feet long. They were a combination of silver pencil, spray paint, and ink. And they had, I wanted the feeling of something coming together, or something as if you're moving in the fog and you see these things materialize before you. Some of them are kind of like religious. Some of them are kind of like, I wanted to get a sense of any people seeing these, and they could see themselves in it. It was more of an experiential feeling that I wanted from it, rather than when you saw the paintings and you saw a story. And you could read into the paintings what you wanted to, but on the ephemeral reflections, it was more about experiencing possibly sound, memories, and what your own experiences were. And that was influenced by a lot of Mexican music I used to listen to at the time. And I was playing around with the idea of sound going past each other and how you would do that visually. So I was also influenced by Charles Ives and his 4th of July composition, where you definitely get the sound effect. I don't know how he did it, but as the band is passing by and you can hear it going by and a sense of people talking. So when the thing was exhibited, we turned on the lights and I had some music from different cultures that I taped. So you would have a combination of a Mexican music playing, and then you would have some Irish music coming in there, and sometimes they were layered. Sometimes there was sound that had nothing to do with anything, and it was just a lot of playing around with sound and visually, ephemerally, things that people might experience anywhere. So after I left my college years, I moved around, and I lived in Iowa City for a while and did different things. At that time, I did some what you call shadow boxes. They were very small, and I exhibited those throughout the country, and because they were very easy to ship. Then I moved to New Mexico in the early 80s, and once I got myself established there, I started doing installations, and they were like large works of what I did in the shadow boxes. And I also did some sound pieces where you were going down a corridor and you would have conversations at one station, and then you go to another station and you'd have these different sounds that didn't have any kind of significance to them. I mean, they could actually be like drumming on a... I used to drum on barrels and record them. So you just got a sense of going from one space to another space to another space. Then after the installations, I took on this project of making a house. And since I was not very good with a hammer, I decided I was going to do a frame house. It was going to be adobe. And because adobe is has to have mud in between the blocks. And I always loved playing with mud. So I decided to make my house out of adobe and mud. And so I did that. Inside those walls, I have placed poetry by different poets, local, some that, you know, like are mainstays. I have put writings in there, some Mexican poets, so that when the wind blows out there, which it does a lot, that sound and that idea of the poetry inside the walls goes around you like an owl would go around your house. And it's very magical. And then the other thing is that the wall itself is like 4 feet high by 14 inches wide. So I wanted to give a sense of some of the architecture that is in some of those pre-Hispanic archaeological sites. I wanted to have that sense, the massiveness. And that's probably why the house is in adobe, because it is by the time you put the mud on there and the stucco, it is about 20 inches wide, and it's massive. When you walk in there during the summer, it's like walking in a cave, and it can be like very hot out there. 95 degrees, 100 degrees, and very hot, very dry. So when you walk into that house, it's like you're experiencing a totally different space. And so that's kind of where I am now. It's been like a long road, but I love what I'm doing now. Now, the running, which I do, takes up quite a bit of my time, but I try to do one marathon a year. I don't think of myself as an athlete. I think of myself as a performance artist. Because when you are doing that run, you are not the same person that you are when you're talking to your sister or your friend you're a whole different person. And that space in there, because you are going through space physically and mentally, you are going through space too. But that space can be anywhere. And it can be in many directions at one time. So that's kind of where I am now.
And just one last thing I would like to mention, I've been very, very dog-eared about trying to get Irene's works and the techniques out there, because I think it's really important that we not only have a woman artist, a Latina artist, but somebody here from the old Mississippi region, show us with determination it can be done, and also the people that are open their hearts and minds to it. But that painting that I donated to, I'm an alumni of Augustana, and I donated the painting that the forefront is the snow scene, and then the insert is a picture of my grandma and grandpa sitting there in the summertime, because my grandpa's got a summertime type of attire. He's got one of those ribbed sleeveless T-shirts, and so it's a summertime in that picture. But yet the snow scene and Irene sitting on that fruit crate that's got the boycott emblem on there. I think that it's very commendable, especially the young people, because even though they're not out as many picketing as we were in the cold and the snow and so forth. But someday, if it's social media that they're going to do it, or if the young people are starting to go back, not just the young people, but even people my age, we're going back and revisiting those issues, because those issues have to be, if we're going to survive as human beings, we have to interface with other people, and maybe our issues and our possible solutions are different in a different perspective, but that's the only way we're going to advance.
Since I also write poetry, the Mississippi River is a strong image in the poetry. And I kind of write free form, and then, as many poets do, condense it. But that image has become really strong for me, living in the desert. And also some of my projects I'm working on now, besides the house and the wall and the land, is I make these papier-mâché boats, and some of them are like about 5 feet long, probably, almost life-size. Some of them are small boats, and I just love the whole idea of making a boat out of paper, and then the idea of using words, especially about the water and the Mississippi River, and actually placing the boat on that. And someday, I haven't really exhibited a whole lot since the late 90s. So I'm thinking that I would really like to do that with those boats. And I could see the Mississippi River being a really, really strong part of that.
That was Irene and Phyllis Taranas discussing art and growing up in the Mexican barrio of Cook's Point in Davenport. Un nombre que se pronuncia en su pecho usted merece.